Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We're back for the next episode in the Expectations series. Most popular episode, by the way, by far, requested by the most people of any of them. We're going to talk about Tyler Loop and Nate Wiggins today. So not sure why that was popular, but maybe Josh Reed, who is the guest today, can shed some light on that.
Well, Ken, you got two young players that are really exciting. People love new shiny things, and even though Nate Wiggins is a year into the program, he's still relatively new and relatively shiny as a former first-round pick who really came on strong at the second half of last season. And then you got Tyler Loop, the guy who's tasked with the Herculean effort of replacing Justin Tucker. So those two young guys people are excited about.
Yeah, it is a good pairing. You often, with the way I set up the pairings, you often get one star player and one not so great player, or two medium players. And this is it's pretty nice, at least from that perspective. Let's jump right in and talk about Tyler Loop a little bit. The first ever Ravens kicker drafted. They did so in round four with their only pick. As it ended up in round four, they traded down five spots in one of the weird trades of the draft, trade up five spots in round six. But Tyler Loop selected out of Arizona in round four. Not a really six. Impressive resume. I'm sorry, say again?
Round six.
You're correct. You're correct. Sorry about that.
That sounds all good.
I got to correct that. That's bad. Okay, but anyway, not the most impressive kicker in terms of his career field goal percentage, but he certainly has had some distance. Big leg, very apparent at rookie minicamp.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that his accuracy actually went down every year he was in college, but I kind of credit it more to the degree of difficulty of kicks he was attempting, because you see all of his highlights are usually those long bombs. And so if you tip more of those, your accuracy, by nature is not going to be as high as somebody who's just kicking inside the 40 all the time.
Yeah. They have good ways of doing that now that are generally available to the public. But if you go out on what used to be the Football Outsiders site, now it's called FTN. You get some errant shots, field goals and extra points above expectation, which is the big metric that basically will normalize what you're talking about there and give you some good information. I still think, he's a guy who's going to have to go through some technical improvements, but there's nobody I trust more on that than Randy Brown, who's not only is he great at identifying kickers, but he's really plugged in to who the kickers are nationally via some of his work at camps and whatnot, running kicking camps.
Yeah, the thing that got me so excited about Tyler Loop is just listening to him talk about the art, the craft of kicking, and like how this guy is really such a nerd when it comes to the craft. Those are the kind of guys that really kind of get me excited, because I'm like, okay, this dude is clearly not just somebody out there with former soccer player with a big leg, right? This is a guy who like lives and breathes kicking. He has his own kicking coach in the offseason prior to getting drafted, and now he's working with one of the best specialist coaches in the league. So I'm actually really excited about Tyler Loop and his prospects.
Watching at rookie camp, there are a couple things about him that were, and we don't have much else to go on, so this is quite some of what I'm going to talk about is, first of all, he kicks a very high ball, and kind of reminds me, if you remember week three, I think it was, of the 2012 season, the Ravens won that game against New England, and the big event of the thing was Torrey Smith had just lost his brother, I think it was, and caught a touchdown pass, and the Ravens came back and scored the last 10 points of the game and won 31-30, but they won it on a Tucker field goal that went over the right upright, and Belichick really thought it was no good. They ruled it good, and he tried to almost tackle the officials on their way off the field, because he was not satisfied with the call, needless to say. Tyler Loop kicks the ball like that. It's very high. It can exceed the height of the upright where he's kicking the ball. So that was a fairly impressive thing to see at practice.
Yeah, and then like listen to Coach Harbaugh talk about after practice, it was good to hear it. I mean, you can hear the boom coming off of his foot when you have a strong kicker like that. And people make a lot of him, you know, he comes from Arizona, kicking a warm climate. When you get a strong leg like that, you can kick through the wind and through the elements. You know, like sometimes, you know, what you lack sometimes in accuracy, you can make up for in strength when it comes to kicking in the elements, as he's going to be doing in the AFC North.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And Tucker has kicked in some of the worst weather of any kicker. There's a weather adjustment in that FTN data that I would highly encourage people to get that shows up there, but it's something that he'll have to contend with. I want to go to one other thing that's happening at minicamp, which to me was impressive, and I don't really know exactly what was happening, but there's just something is going on that I really, really appreciate. And that's Randy Brown was holding up a football almost like you were holding up a hard-boiled egg from the base, you know, kind of thing. And you know, obviously football has that kind of shape to it, but it looked like, and I couldn't see where his right hand was because it was on the far side of the ball from where I was standing, but it looked like he might've been pointing to a position on the ball where his foot was supposed to make contact. You know, getting into the minuteness of this, yes. I did hear also the notion last year that Jordan Stout says the area on which Justin Tucker wanted the ball placed was the size of a piece of rice.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about the Ravens, man, that woman's pride to take them to their special teams, how meticulous they are down, like you said, the most minute detail, because that's really the difference between winning and losing at times, and that's what made the Patriots so great for such a long time when they had the kickers that they were running through, is not just from a kicking standpoint, but just like having nailed down the details, because, you know, that's what kind of separates the champions from the almost contenders and the perennial contenders to the true championship-worthy teams, the teams that kind of overemphasize the details, and if you get to kicker going down to the place and the point where he wants this ball placed on the ground so he can kick it off that foot. I love it, man.
Yeah, I did too. Career long kick at Arizona of 62 yards. He spent 5 years there kicking. They did bring in another guy who also had 5 years at Wyoming, and he's a different kind of a cat. That guy's name is Hoyland, I believe. Where did I see?
Hoyland.
Yeah, John Hoyland, and he's a shorter guy. Who still kicks the ball far, but I think he was mostly brought in for as an accuracy guy. And while Loop's made 126 out of 128 extra points at Arizona, which is, that's fine. I think they still have the easy extra points in college, right? They didn't go to the longer version that the NFL has.
No, they're sticking to chip shots in college.
All right. So it's probably good, but it's not great kind of thing. I think Hoyland had some record for not missing under 40 yards or one miss under 40 yards or some such like that. He'd been very effective with some shorter kicks. Other thoughts on having a competition in camp? Do you like that? Do you think they don't really need it, probably? Distraction? What do you think?
I mean, I think the Ravens have always valued having another camp leg, whether you know, they had Tucker in tow or somebody else. And, you know, you could always flip that guy for a pick, you know, if he turned out to show something in training camp, or in, not training camp, but, you know, joint practices or even preseason. The only, like, so I don't mind a kick, kicking competition between two rookies. What I didn't want was that pressure on Loop of having Justin Tucker kind of breathing down his neck and in the building and around all the time. And that was one of the things I kind of pointed out. One of my pieces is just kind of like, you know, that's less pressure on the successor, because it's bad enough that you're trying to replace, you know, the most accurate kicker in NFL history. But if you're actively competing against that guy, and you know he has so much stake in that, not just the community, but that locker room, you know, that locker room and the organization, everybody around there, you probably got pictures of him all around the castle and everything like that. And then you got to go, you're competing with this guy and day after day. So I didn't want that pressure for Tyler Loop, just from, not because I didn't think he could handle the competition, but from like a mental standpoint. I mean, you're a rookie kicker going against one of the greatest in NFL history. That's just a lot mentally, and you don't want the kicker to get the yips.
Well, I maybe have something to add to that. So Tucker, when he came through and won the spot, did have to compete for attention, for a lot of the other things that go along with, you know, being in a kicking competition against Billy Cundiff. It was far from a foregone conclusion, because the Ravens have been through this process multiple times where they've let somebody go. In some cases, some of the guys really ended up being among the most accurate kickers of all time, which is one of the reasons you got to love Randy Brown in terms of bringing in a bunch of guys who might work out. But, you know, and I'm not even sure these guys were all even Brown guys. These might have been Rosberg guys from prior, but they brought in, you know, Hauschka for a period, and Will Lutz, Graham Gano. Who else am I missing in this group that they brought in, has gone elsewhere, and Dicker the Kicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've had all these guys who have gone on to become, and it shows you how plugged in he really is to the system. So I think you're probably right. I'd be more concerned that Tucker wants to be out there on the field making kicks and wants the long snapper and holder over working with him. And Tyler Loop wants the coach, the long snapper and the holder working with him, but certainly the long snapper and the holder to try and make some kicks. We saw, you know, there's a limited amount you can do as a kicker, because you can't take an unlimited amount of kicks. That's a common misconception, is that you just go out there and kick for a couple hours and, you know, improve. You did that, you'll destroy your leg.
Yeah.
So they really have to kick like 3 days a week, maybe 4 days a week at the utmost. And they take, you know, they're out there for 3 hours and they might take 30 kicks. And that includes some they get under game conditions, or, you know, simulated game conditions, and some they take as practice. But you can't kick continuously. You just can't do that. If you want to maintain your leg health.
Yeah, I know kickers catch a lot of flack about, oh, you guys just do is sit around. Like, well, they can't kick the entire time, or they right. wouldn't be no good to you on Sundays. So I'm all fine with just like with them, like not overdoing it as far as the physical, but just really kind of nailing down those details and, like I said, finding that sweet spot on the balls, because it's not going to work for every kicker, right? Every kicker has different feet, you know, different swing, everything. You're not going to coach every kicker the same. So like whatever Randy Brown has to do to, like you said, if he's holding the ball like an egg and pointing to the spot, if that's Tyler Loop's sweet spot, then, you know, make sure he knows how hard and where to kick that sweet spot at. So I'm cool with them, like they're not overworking him in the sense of, you know, like tiring out that leg, as long as he focuses on getting to find that sweet spot.
Another thing that is a pressure point for kickers these days are the new rules. And I don't think enough has been said about this so far, but the new rules are going to be very hard on kickers, because they force you to kick the ball between the 0 and the 20-yard line, which is not an unlimited landing spot, particularly when you want to be as close to the goal line as possible. If you have the occasional touchback, ball comes out to the 35 now. So that's a very big change from last year. They did it because they didn't want to have as many 30-yard starting points, just because the offense or the kicking team doesn't want the variance.
Yeah, that landing zone is really going to create, like I said, they're really trying to revitalize the return game, but that also means, you know, you're going to have a kicker that can really kind of, I don't want to say directionally kick, I guess kind of directionally kick, right, if you want to get them in that landing zone, that sweet spot. So, you know, you might even see some guys, I'm saying working out as punters, but kind of maybe learning from the punters in a sense as far as how to kick things directionally, even though they're going to be kicking off of a tee and not, you know, just drop kick or whatever.
And of course, that'll mean they have to practice that more, which probably, if anything, takes away from the number of their kicks that they will make in a field goal setting. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if this had an actual measurable impact on field goal accuracy this year. It wouldn't shock me if it didn't either. But I think that this is something that I may be slightly overstating how difficult this will be for individual kickers to manage, you know, getting the ball. Hopefully they'll want it between about the 0 and the 6 yard line, say, to try and, you know, minimize the starting field position for opponents. But this is a really punitive number they've come up with. And you know, the fact that you kick it in the end zone, it's at the 35 yard line. You kick it out of bounds, it's at the 40 yard line, are significantly, I mean, those are so close, it doesn't even really make sense to me.
Yeah, it might be more detrimental to young kickers more so than older guys, like, you know, your Jake Elliott's Will Lutz, you know, Will Lutz, those kind of guys, you know, because the young kickers, like, they're brand new to this kind of thing, you know. At least the older guys who've been in the league a little bit have kind of had like a 1 year trial run with this kind of directional, you know, landing zone kind of thing, you know. So it might be a little more of an acclimation for the younger guys like a Tyler Loop. So we shall see.
All right, well, let's look at what a good season and a great season is for Tyler Loop. And I've been telling people as we go through the series, I use like a 60th percentile, an 80th percentile approximation. And it's a lot of cases I'm just qualitative anyway, but I'm giving you those, what I think are a 60th and 80th percentile outcome. But use whatever method you want to, Josh. And tell me, what would a good season for Tyler Loop be for you?
Not missing any extra points. You gotta have those. That's kind of a baseline for me. But you know, just making anywhere between, I want to say, 85 to, I don't want to put them in the 90s would be a great. So anybody between 85 to, I want to say, 87% of his field goals. But as far as that's like qualitative, including long distance field goals, right? But if you're talking about, it's like he's gonna be damn near perfect under 50. So you know, especially with that leg and with all the woes we kind of had at that position last year, damn near perfect under 50, and then overall between 85 and 87% for field goal percentage.
Okay. All right. I'd define it a little differently. I'm saying a good season certainly makes the team for starters, and he delivers a plus season in terms of field goals and extra points relative to expectation after the weather adjustment. So he's going to kick in some unfavorable situations in Baltimore. I want a plus number relative to the league. And I think Aaron Schatz does the work on this. He may use a 3-year trailing average of kickers, which might mean you're always a little bit behind in terms of the science of kicking and the improvement, but that's okay. I want after weather adjustment, I want him to have a net positive number. And that's a Wolfpack achievement. So that's a long snapper and holder achievement. You know, there have been questions about Jordan Stout. I think, you know, from discussions I've had, I think I am reversing myself on that, and that Jordan Stout is certainly not the problem in terms of what caused Justin Tucker's decline. But I think that if the three of them together can deliver a plus field goals and extra points relative to expectation after adjustment for weather, I think I'd be very good with that for a rookie season out of Tyler Loop.
Yeah, sounds good.
How about a great year?
A great year for me would just make 90 plus percent of his field goal percentage. That'd be a great season for me. And then really, my bad. And really just excelling where he's good at. It's 50 plus yards. If he can make, like, say he attempts 10 of those. If he makes like 7 of 10, 8 of 10, anything more than 56% would be great as far as long field goals. And you know, I guess a great season. I don't know, making a Pro Bowl, making some really clutch kicks when the Ravens need it, some game winners. I hope they're not playing too many close games, but if they do, just kind of being a reliable asset for them in that phase of the game. You know, I can't tell you how hard it was to come to realization that, you know, before I could, you know, get up, use the bathroom whenever the Stucker came onto the field, and now you can set your watch to it. And then last season, really the last two seasons, I'd find myself kind of cringing when he was attempting missing some kicks, even inside the inside the 50 sometimes. Like, I never thought I'd be to the place where Justin Tucker wasn't a sure thing from inside the 50, but that's really what it was last year. You kind of have to he made it this time. And then when he made him, it was just like, it was still baffling, but at the same time, you're kind of getting used to him kind of being an unsure thing. And a great season for Tyler Lue would be to be a sure thing. So 90% from cumulative as far as his field goal percentage, 90+% anything in the 90s would be great. And then being especially accurate from deep.
I think while I would love that, I think that's probably a little bit too high for an 80th percentile result for me. So what I'll say is that what we see from Moore and Stout in particular allows Loop's quality to shine through at a higher level than it has in college, and that he delivers in the top quartile of field goals and extra points relative to expectation. He's kicked under some good conditions in Arizona and had some good results, but not incredibly great results. I think he could be at the top quartile this season if all things are going right. And additionally, I want him to deliver on the placement of kickoffs that are going to be much more critical, which means he doesn't have more than a handful, but certainly below the league average in terms of the number of touchbacks that create these 35-yard line situations. I don't foresee teams being willing to give up the 35-yard line even in almost any game script situation. There are situations, I guess, where you don't really want to have a competitive play due to injuries in a 30-point game. I guess that could happen. But I don't think you really want to put an opponent at the 35-yard line very often.
I mean, there's some coaches out there I feel like have supreme confidence in their defense. And if you're going against, say, a rookie quarterback or like a team that's down to their second or third string quarterback, you guys have been moving the ball all day. I'll give you the ball at the 35. We'll get it back in three plays.
Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly true. There's one of the old things from, a lot of sources in terms of football analytics is that if you start the opposing team at the 50-yard line, you make every quarterback a great quarterback in terms of their points per drive kind of metrics. So anyway, the 35 and the 50 are two different places. I agree, but I just thought, you know, I tossed that in there. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about Nate Wiggins. Delivered an outstanding rookie season at age 21. I mean, we're so spoiled in terms of the quality of first-round picks in Baltimore. I think we got another very good one here who's well on track to being a Pro Bowl player. And yet, I don't think we really appreciated that draft pick as much as maybe we should have.
No, I agree. A lot of people wanted the Ravens to go in a different direction, and most people only remember Nate Wiggins from running the fast 40 and then pulling his hamstring at the combine. But for what he did, what he meant to this team down the stretch, I mean, he had some early struggles. That's kind of to be expected, you know, given that making that adjustment from the college game to the pro game, as far as learning the rules, as far as the spacing, the different dimensions of the field, and then what you can get away with as far as physicality with the receivers down the field, you know, at the line of scrimmage and beyond. People kind of underestimate, you know, how big of an adjustment that is for defensive backs, especially when you're used to kind of being a little bit more grabby in college compared. And you saw that with Nate Wiggins earlier on in the season. You know, he'd make some plays, but he also, like, you know, get called for holding here or pass interference there. But as the season went on, he really kind of honed in on his technique, not even just on defense, on special teams too. I mean, there were times where, like, you know, he was playing the gunner role, and there were times where he early in the season, he'd get called for kind of pushing somebody out of bounds. And there were times he would just, like, face guard a guy out of bounds, not touching him, let the guy run himself out of bounds. This is on punt coverage. So this is the guy who's kind of learning in both facets of the game and really kind of picked it up down the stretch for the Ravens and became a huge asset.
You know, real good point about Wiggins, the special teams player. He played 217 snaps last year. The Ravens are losing a ton of special team snaps, but he played kick coverage. He played the punt return unit, and he's on the field goal block unit as well, which I hate, by the way. I hate when one of your starting cornerbacks is on the field goal block unit.
Didn't he block one? But he was like offsides, right? He I forget what game it was. I think it might have been the Philadelphia game. He had blocked one, was offsides.
Well, I'm going to put it this way. I think his time playing special teams is going to draw to a close fairly shortly. He's too good a cornerback to risk in a higher injury situations, particularly in the punt return game. That I don't think they'd want to do that. But anyway, I'm sure he's usually on the outside. I'm sure he's not usually getting blocked on the inside of the formation. But still, I think he's a guy that the Ravens may depend on special teams for one more year just because they have this huge exodus of inside linebacker special team snaps they have to make up for. But I don't think that he's a guy long-term that they're gonna keep in that spot.
Yeah, you got TJ Tampa and Cone and Longer Beam and those guys. I mean, we'll see which one of those, how many of those guys end up making the roster. But you have plenty of, I wouldn't say plenty of corner depth, but you have a lot of young corners that can potentially fill in that role if and when needed.
Yeah, they have them. They need them all to do that job because they do have some guys on the defense in particular who aren't valuable special teams players. And they probably have more than they've ever had an outside linebacker who don't fill that role. So, like, you know, like Harrison was a hybrid outside-inside linebacker last year and played a lot of special team snaps. But the guy who doesn't...
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Play hardly any special team snaps. He does play on two units, but 30 special team snaps last year was a jabo. Adisa Isaac, I'm sure when he's active, he'll play a fair number of special team snaps. I don't expect Mike Green to be used on special teams. I would expect him not to be used on special teams.
Agreed.
Yeah, so we'll see how some of that plays out. And the Ravens, you know, they're inside linebacker race. Buchanan is obviously going to be asked to do a lot. Maybe the Trenton Simpson has to go back and play more special teams now again, since if he's not going to be the starter at weak side linebacker, which he still might be, you know, he certainly may start the season there. But then if he loses that role, I mean, his special teams responsibilities go way back up again.
Yeah. Even if he's in a rotation with Buchanan, I think he's going to play a lot of special teams for him.
Yeah. Let's get back to Wiggins for a second, because it's 2024 metrics. I just want to go through 7.0 yards per target, 7.0 snaps per target, which was even better, by the way, than his final year in college. One interception, one TD, and a 74.8 opposition passer rating. That opposition passer rating was the ninth best among the 80 cornerbacks who played 50% plus of the top snap total. I know that's a lot to go through, but I feel like I have to be precise about the definition there. It's not 50% of snaps, it's 50% of the top snap total. So anyway, outstanding year where he was, you know, 88th percentile, 89th percentile in terms of his opposition passer rating as a rookie. I love that fact. The only thing I really didn't like about his rookie year, and the blemish upon it, is the 11 penalties. He had only one in his last year of college. Really had trusted seemingly his recovery speed, and he did not seem to have that same trust of his recovery speed. And hey, let's face it, the receivers are a lot better that he's facing week after week. They're the creme de la creme that he would have faced in college.
Yeah, and that's to the point I was making earlier, is that adjustment that those guys make as far as learning how physical you can be with receivers downfield, you know, locating the ball. Not that he had a problem locating the ball, but like, look, these guys at the next level, they're faster, they're shiftier. You know, they know how to get open and get downfield. And even though you run a 4.28, I'm not saying it doesn't always translate, but like, you know, you have guys that may not run as fast as you, but like, you know, understand the nuances of route running, it can kind of get you out of position. And so a lot of times, I wouldn't say kind of panic, but he kind of like, oh shoot, like let me get back, and he kind of got out of position a couple times. But I just love the way he learned as the season went on. You could see like week after week him kind of getting better in his technique and being more refined. So yeah, I'm really excited to see him. We have in store for him in year two.
Finished year with 13 PDs. That really doesn't even reflect the impact of contested catches that he created. He's a guy who really is right there contesting the football, very aware of where the ball is. Unlike the guy on the other side of the field, unfortunately, this last year, he really had a good sense of where the ball is going. Always a he's kind of a patient spider of a player. But the very first game, that very first preseason game against the Eagles, they threw at him six times. They completed two passes for 8 yards. So 1.3 yards per target. And he had, I believe he had three passes defensed the first three times they threw at him.
Yep.
Great start. Great start. He did have a nasty habit of dropping some easy picks in this year. Not what you want, but then I look at that as, hey, he was there.
Exactly. And
as you know, next year, some more of those are going to be picks.
Yeah, we'll get into that when as far as our good and great seasons. But yeah, definitely the fact that he was able to get his hands on the balls let you know that this guy has good instincts and you know, I wouldn't say great ball skills, but at least he knows how to make a play on the ball and stop it from being completed.
You know, one of the things that was a problem in his last year at Clemson, I think actually it was a problem in his career at Clemson more. I'm going to look up his missed tackle right now before I, you know, say something that I'll regret. But he had a 17.4% missed tackle rate in college. He actually cut that in his first year with the Ravens. He was at 13.3 or 13.2%. And I looked that up relative to the median of that same group of 80 and is actually 0.1% better than the league average in terms of tackle rate. That is a big overperformance in terms of missed tackle rate, because you would expect moving up to a different level that he's going to have a much harder time finishing tackles against some bigger men and some players who have more MTF ability than he would have seen in college. So I thought that was fantastic that the tackling came in so far above expectation.
Yeah, and I think he kind of put more emphasis on that because I knew coming into the league, he knows people are going to like talk about, I want to knock some of him being slight of frame. Usually with those guys who are slight, they go one or two ways. They either live up to expectation as far as being guys who's afraid to tackle or, you know, bad tacklers, or they take that as a personal challenge and they're like, I'm going to be that guy. It was even to his detriment at one point. He had that shoulder injury that one time because he was, you know, came down hard and tackled somebody low. But just like those guys who are slender like that sometimes, like, you know, like they're going to shy away from it. You know, I'm going to say you don't want your Deion Sanders talking about they don't pay me to tackle, but I think it was a sense of pride for him, and the coaches definitely probably put an emphasis on him as far as improving his tackling. I can only remember a handful of times of him whiffing. I think there's like one time in the Eagles game against A.J. Brown, and then they think a couple other times where they were like bad whiffs, but even then, it was an effort. It was just a failure of execution.
Yeah. Yeah. According to this, he had two missed tackles against Dallas. I don't really remember them. I'd have to go back and take a look at that game. It wasn't one of his good coverage games either. What else do I want to talk about? This is kind of just a very interesting thing on a tiny, tiny scale. But he rushed the passer twice during the season, once in the Chargers game and once in the Buffalo game. Against the Chargers, he got a pressure against the Bills. In the AFC divisional game, he got a quarterback hit. So I look back and he had eight other times that he rushed the passer in college. And boy, do you never want to use Nate Wiggins to rush the passer unless you think you've got something schemed up that's pretty juicy. Four out of eight times in college, he got home in one manner or another for a pressure, a quarterback hit, or a sack among his pass rush snaps.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens will dial it up every now and then. They like I remember, like, I didn't want them to use Marlon Humphrey in that role for a while, but especially because sometimes you get these quarterbacks and they get these free these free releases to the quarterback, and sometimes they almost panic and they don't know what to do, especially when they're going against bigger quarterbacks. You know, with the Chargers, you're going against Justin Herbert. With the Bills, you're going against Josh Allen. And both times, you know, Nate Wiggins wasn't afraid of the size of the quarterback. It was just that, you know, he either got there a step late, you know, for the sack, but still had a good pressure. So I'd prefer them not to blitz Nate Wiggins. He's more useful in coverage. But yeah, if he can get home for a quick pressure and force the throwaway, hey man, you do dial that up every now and then as a changeup. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, if you have the players who can drop the coverage, that's a privilege you have, usually in a condensed formation where you can send somebody off the edge, or send somebody from the outside, I should say, on a cat blitz like that. Let's look ahead to 2025 and look at some things that you would like to see improvement at from Nate Wiggins. I've got three things that I think are going to require a change maybe in the way he approaches the game. The first is reducing flags and going back to just trusting his makeup speed the way he did in college. I mean, he basically was an I dare you cornerback in college in terms of you want to try and run by me? You won't be able to stay ahead kind of thing.
Yeah. One of my main things is cut down on the penalties too. Like I said, he started to do that as the season went on last year, but just kind of continue to be more disciplined in you know, your technique and, you know, trust in your ability. I mean, you're one of the most gifted guys out there from an athletic standpoint. Great length, great speed. Just trusting your ability, I guess, would be my other thing. Trusting your ability and let it fly, man. Let it fly.
Second thing, and how about you name anything? You got anything else you want him to prove in besides penalties?
Catch the damn ball. Shoot. I mean, ah. like Marlon Humphrey caught a lot of flack early in his career for having like what they call lineman hands or stones for hands. And I don't want Nate Wiggins to be in what Marlon was in like year seven last year when he finally started getting picks on a regular basis.
Right.
Yes. I want him to kind of become that ball hawk sooner rather than later.
And also it kind of limits the discussion of Humphrey being a safety, but the characteristics all went together last year. Not only was he getting back to front interceptions, but he was getting a lot of interceptions coming off his own man, which means he's seeing the whole play, even though he's got one particular coverage responsibility.
That those Tampa interceptions, game.
Yeah. Tampa, for example. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimmy Smith got a fair number of those interceptions in his career. Whenever I see that from a corner, those interceptions I value at a higher level than even, really good patient undercut interceptions, even though those things can be beautiful in their own right. Well, that's a good run. And I should have had that on my list, but I didn't. But it's obviously very important. And we kind of covered it earlier in the PD thing. I've got two other things though. He's probably going to have to change positions this year. At least I think he might. My guess would be that they're going to keep Humphrey at left corner and move Wiggins to right corner, which means he'll be taking Brandon Stevens' old spot and be opposite the X receiver in most situations. If you have Humphrey on the right side and they do the overlapping receiver thing where they go motion and they switch positions on you, you have Humphrey basically in the slot, which is I think a position where he's going to be okay with. But on the doubled side, he's got a chance to help you also with regard to some off man interceptions that might show up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Wiggins is the guy who's probably going to have to change positions if anybody does to go to right corner.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that earlier today, actually, when we were in preparation for this podcast, thinking that he's probably got to flip sides and actually take that Brandon Stevens role. Cause even though Marlon will be playing in the slot when they come out three receiver sets, but you know, for the most of the time, say you're going against a team that has a lot of 12 personnel and two receivers on the outside, he's going to have to take over that Brandon Stevens role and kind of be that, you know, you're always going to give, you know, seniority is going to go to Marlon, you know, he's the five-time Pro Bowler here. So four-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, he'll be an island cornerback more often on that side, which is appropriate. He's the guy who can do it for the Ravens. The last thing that comes up is if the Ravens were to change their strategy with regard to traveling. Now, they traveling by that I mean the cornerback. You decide the cornerback matchup instead of allowing the offense to decide it by having fixed sides. Ravens for time immemorial have been a fixed side cornerback team, which means in the last few years, they put Brandon Stevens at right cornerback and they put Marlon Humphrey at left cornerback, or maybe somebody else like Wiggins at left cornerback. But they're basically always playing their normal quote unquote sides. And there are some continuity value, which comes from that in terms of having, you always know the player to your right or left, and you have your favorite shoulder in terms of how you're defending and you want to turn on to make a play on the football and whatnot. So there are reasons to do it. But there's also great reasons why you want to dictate that matchup and not allow the offense to do so.
Yeah. I think like when you come down to like specific matchups, like say they have a speed receiver, say a Tyreek Hill, I'd rather have Nate Wiggins on Tyreek Hill just because of the makeup speed and the appear speed more so than Marlon Humphrey. Not saying that Marlon Humphrey, you know, former track star can't run, but Tyreek Hill has a different gear. And so if you want somebody who might get blown past, you want somebody who has that quick recovery speed on that side, you know, I mean, I guess in comes to Miami, you got two speedsters, but Tyreek Hill is still at his age, still has a different kind of speed. So if it's more speedy option, I wouldn't mind Wiggins traveling to more speedy guy and, you know, kind of putting putting Marlon on that more physical, like if we're talking about, say, like the Steelers in particular, right? I'd rather have DK Metcalf and Marlon Humphrey and that be that battle on the side. Like, I'd rather have Marlon follow DK, not to say that Wiggins can't be physical, but I like my physical corner on their physical receiver.
Okay. All right. Well, let's, what do you think is do you think there's a reasonable probability the Ravens switch to being a traveling team in 2025? Or do you think it's just kind of like a pipe dream and something we have interesting to talk about on the show, but they'll never do it?
I think it could really depend on come down to matchup, you know, like far as like who you want on which receiver, like I was just alluded to earlier. That's really kind of what it boils down to. I think they might entertain it if it comes to certain matchups.
All right. All right. Fair enough. Let's talk about a good and a great year. Start us off. What's a good year for Nate Wiggins look like?
Good year is to continue to ascend. He's on a great trajectory right now and just kind of doing more of the same. Get your hands on more balls, you know, like he was doing at the end of the last season. Becoming more disciplined, continue to be more disciplined in your technique. Cut down on the penalties. You know, just kind of continue that same trajectory. That's what I think as far as a good season. Continue to bring that missed tackle rate down even a little bit further. You know, there's only so much weight and muscle mass he can put onto his lean frame just because some guys are just, you know, built lean. But, you know, just kind of being even more physical without being undisciplined.
Okay, that's good. It's very terse, too. That's a good job on that. That's something I don't always get done. But I have a similar thing. I want to play a full season, essentially, of every down play at corner. And I think there should be nothing in the way of that at this point. The Ravens really need him to be in every down corner, and probably most likely path is for him to be the every down right corner, if I had to guess. I think his play needs to improve despite the fine rookie year with a reduction in penalties. And penalties are very serious. And if you're looking at like a PFF grade metric, you're going to get an underweight on those penalties. And for corners, it's very important. You can't be understated how important it is. So he really needs to fix that. And I hope the Ravens will work with him to try and get back to relying on that recovery speed in a way that will improve his overall efficiency. And then I want to see his development track remain that of a potential Pro Bowl player in year three. And that's in a 60th percentile season. So in that you can guess where the great season is going at this point, but a 60th percentile season, he's on track still to be a Pro Bowler in year three.
Yeah, agreed. I definitely think the addition of the two secondary coaches they added this offseason will aid in his development too, and Chuck Pagano and that guy they got from the Chiefs.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's an outstanding a pairing there, and Pagano in particular could be a great mentor for Wiggins. Could really add a lot to his game. So tell me what a great season looks like.
Man, just making that elite, the jump to elite status, just kind of being that, not just a Pro Bowl caliber corner, but a potential All Pro caliber corner, somebody who, like I said, cuts down on those penalties, you know, like severely, and performs one of the best cornerback tandems with Marlon Humphrey on the outside, becomes a true lockdown corner, and just like becomes worth every penny and then some that the Ravens are giving him, which isn't a lot, you know, given that he's still on a rookie deal, but just, you know, continue to look like the steal that he's already become, and take an even greater leap, you know, getting I mentioned this in the good, but you know, like not just getting his hands on more balls, but, you know, becoming a playmaker as far as, like, you know, taking back, get your hand on those balls and taking them back for touchdowns. I mean, that distinctive play he had don't get me wrong, you know, what was the quarterback for the Browns team? He kind of floated that thing out there. But I'm saying just, you know, being more instinctive and making more plays on the ball, becoming a playmaker, not just play preventer all the time.
I couldn't even tell you who that was. It Dorian Thompson-Robinson back at the –
No,
at,
it was – God, who was it?
It's not, man. Flacco. It's not.
No, I want to say Cody Kessler, but I know it's not Cody Kessler. It was just one of those random. God, what? Who was it?
Was random Browns guys.
One of the random Browns. Someone on the back of that jersey.
All right, you can look it up for a minute. Right, I know which jersey you're talking about. That lists the entire set of Browns quarterbacks since 1999. I'll give you my great year. He nails down one of the two cornerback spots full time basis. And when I mean that, I mean he's never out of there. He's not a guy like Stevens was 2 years ago. They install him and they never look back at the decision as being a bad one. Stevens, obviously in 24, they replaced him with some rotational play with White, but with Wiggins, I'd expect him never to be replaced in a neutral game script. His presence, helps along with a play from Awuzie for the Ravens to deploy Humphrey as most needed. So that might be a slot corner. It could even be at safety, could be on the outside, obviously. You know, my hope certainly from the start of the season is that Owuzie does not somehow get the Stevens role where he's comfortable at right cornerback and they put him in there every down. That's got to be Wiggins' role because Owuzie should be a guy, I think, who comes in on third down, allows Humphrey to move to the slot at that point. If, in fact, you know, he still has it in him to play at the level the Ravens need it to be. The point was made earlier in a TJ Tampa discussion was that, you know, a great year for Tampa might be outplaying Owuzie and taking his job.
Exactly. Bailey Zappi was the name of the quarterback. Bailey Zappi.
Bailey Zappi.
Yeah, just good. But yeah, that'd be great too. I'm just like, no, I don't want a rotation between Nate Wiggins and Owuzie. I want him to take that job and, you know, seize it full time.
Got a little more here in terms of what a great season is. I want his ball production and his penalty avoidance to improve to a Pro Bowl level, and his play overall to improve to a Pro Bowl level. And that's whether or not he actually receives the honor. I'm fine if he plays at a Pro Bowl level and doesn't get it. In fact, in some ways, I'm actually happier with that because his fifth-year option value is cranked up as high. So I do root for the player too, but there's some things that Ravens fans don't realize just how much they're sticking the knife in their own thigh to do all this excessive Pro Bowl voting we do to raise the player's salary. So it's part of the game. You want the players to be properly rewarded, but it does put the team in a little bit more difficult position to get a long-term contract settled because the fifth year option can be so high. And honestly, in the case of Linderbaum, it's totally screwed the pooch in part. It took away any possibility of a fifth year option. The fact that he's made a couple of Pro Bowls, but also generally the mechanic they use of pooling all linemen made it impossible. And it's actually made it, you know, more than not likely that Linderbaum will be lost after the 2025 season. They'll try and come to a long-term agreement, but it may not be possible. The camps may be too far away.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. You said Tyler's been great, and I feel like he's really the next guard as far as centers in the league after with Kelsey gone now. So I'd love for him to be the Ravens long term, just not at that absorbent number.
Right. He can't make what Creed Humphrey makes. Creed Humphrey is too much better than everybody else in the league, and Humphrey's making $18 million a year for 4 years, and he just signed that deal. It's not like it was signed. It was signed by what I think during last season was a 4-year extension. It's not reasonable that he would have that deal. It is reasonable that there'd be an inflation adjustment for what he does get, but I would start at the base of something like $16 million a year for 4 years. And I know Cam Jurgens already is signed for more than that, but I would start with some sort of base like that, inflate it properly, inflate it for what the salary cap has gone up, and I think you still come in north of 17 million, but not at 18 million. And if the demand is for 18 million or 20 million, it's time to move on. It's time to find out, find that next center who can take you forward, because it wouldn't make sense. It is one of the unfortunate things about drafting a center in the first round is you lose that year five option value.
Well, that's why the Ravens always cross-trainer guys. You got a guy like Nick Samak, who's somebody that they really liked last year. And I'm not sure Dellinger. If you're gonna yep, Dellinger is another guy they can cross train. And you still got Ben Cleveland in there. You never know what Ben Cleveland's gonna do a year from now.
Yeah, it's true. Ben Cleveland could be playing some center this year if Linderbaum misses time, because there aren't tons of other options at this point.
Nope, just him and Samak at this point.
All right. Always a pleasure talking football with you, Josh. Great to hear your family's doing well. We had just a little chance to talk during the production meeting. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yes, you can find all my Ravens content at Baltimore Ravens on the SI.com with the Sports Illustrated Ravens affiliate. So that's where all my Ravens stuff can be found.
If you had any questions about fertility problems in the United States and the general dropping birth rate, one guy who's doing his job to not make sure that happens, that the Handmaid's Tale doesn't become a real story in real life. Is Josh over there, who now has 5 kids all of a sudden, right?
Yep. My oldest daughter just celebrated her 4th birthday on Sunday, a Mother's Day. And then I have a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and 2 8-month-olds.
That your wife deserves a medal. Oh my God. That's remarkable.
Oh yeah. She's the best.
All right. Well, Josh, always a pleasure having you on, my friend. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short, hit me up. Otherwise, listen to the Expectations series, if you will. If you're listening to this on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe. I don't ask for that on a regular basis, but please do if you have a moment. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.